perfume department at Hannington's, a doting mother frying spam fritters, desperate to hear of her son's adventures on the dark side of the law. But it appeared that Bob had been thinking, always dangerous.
"Where do you think the rest of her is, then?"
he asked almost fretfully.
"I don't know," said Edgar.
The legs and torso had been found in the left luggage office at Brighton Station, individually concealed within plain black cases, the kind that house the less interesting orchestral instruments, a French horn, maybe, or a tuba. It had been the smell which had alerted station staff. It was a cold, grey August, but still warm enough to make a dead body smell pretty bad after a few days.
"Who would do a thing like that?" said Bob.
Again he sounded personally affronted at the sheer cheek of a person who would cut a woman into pieces and leave them scattered untidily around the place. "Someone very strange," said Edgar. He thought of the mortuary room, and the head and legs with the gap in between, the sickly smell, the marble skin. "Tell you something," he said. "I was almost sick today, just looking at what they'd done." Bob seemed shocked at his boss's frailty.
"Surely you saw worse in the war?"
"I saw a lot of odd things in the war," said Edgar. "You wouldn't want to know." Bob looked as if he heartily agreed with this sentiment.
"I can't believe nobody saw anything at the station," he said, sounding aggrieved again.
The two boxes had been deposited on Monday morning, and it was now Wednesday. But it seemed that none of the station staff remembered who had left the boxes and why they didn't pick them up again on Monday evening. The only description they had was pitiful in the extreme.
"It was a man. I think he was wearing a hat."
"What sort of hat?" wondered Edgar now. "A pirate's tricorn? An errand boy's cap? A top hat?" For some reason, perhaps it was because of the music case connection, Edgar could imagine a top hat. "We'll go and see them again tomorrow," he said. "Ask at the shops around the station. Someone must have seen something."
"No one's ever seen anything," said Bob. "It's this town. It's a hotbed of vice."
Bob wasn't from Brighton, and it showed. He had been brought up in a small village on the Kent coast. His parents were Methodists, and sometimes that showed too. "It's not too bad," said Edgar. He liked Brighton. When he first joined the police force, he had been stationed in Croydon. Brighton was definitely a step up. He liked the cheerful anonymity of the town, although, as Bob said, sometimes that had its drawbacks. But surely a man who could cut a woman in two must have left a trail behind him.
"In three," said Bob, when Edgar voiced this thought aloud. "He cut her into three. We haven't seen the middle bit yet."
That was the thing about police work, thought Edgar, as he watched Bob go up to the bar to order more drinks. There was always something to look forward to. As he walked home, Edgar thought again about his father and the mixed grill. What would his dad, long dead now, have thought about having a son who was a policeman? On one hand, the job surely deserved his parents' most prized epithet, respectable. But on the other, it hardly matched their other major criterion, nice. Edgar had spent the morning looking at dismembered body parts, the afternoon trying to trace someone, anyone, who might know how they came to rest in the left luggage office at Brighton Station, and the evening, drinking beer with a lad who should be looking up to him as a superior officer. No, nice it wasn't. Edgar's digs were in Hanover, the steep hill that stretched from the pavilion almost to the racecourse. The houses were mostly small and run down, but on a clear day you could see the whole of Brighton spread out before you, a series of tottering white terraces until you reached the pier and the sea. As Edgar stomped up the worst part of the hill, he reflected how his mother would have considered the area common. Edgar's parents had graduated from a terrace to a semi-detached bungalow in Esher, and had thought themselves the most fortunate people on earth. Edgar's father had not lived long to enjoy the suburban bliss. He had died barely a year after the move to Surrey, but Edgar's mother, Rose...